Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and it's right in the middle of the Missouri deer season. And I'm sitting at a fantastic place called the Huzal Hilton, right here on the banks of the Huzal Creek or River in south central Missouri in the Missouri Ozarks. There's a deer camp going on here. And I kind of wandered in here today. I don't see any deer hanging from any meat poles or anything like that. But these guys look like they're having a great time. And with me today is Mr. Spencer Hudson, has to be one of the co-owners, I guess, of the Huzal Hilton. This is not 10 stories high by any means.
Not by any means.
We're going to talk about the history of this place a little bit later in the program. Okay. Then we got Dr. Rodney Harrison. Now, is that the Missouri Baptist Association or
Missouri
convention?
Missouri Baptist Homes and Healthcare Ministries.
You bet. Love those places. I may be looking forward to residing there at some point, not too far in the future, you know. But if I do, I got the place picked out. We'll talk about that just a little bit later. Then, I've really got to behave myself today. I've got my minister here, Reverend Tommy Miller, you know. So you guys don't tell any bad stories on me.
There you go.
But glad to have all you guys on the program, all experienced deer hunters. Some more experienced than others because they got the gray whiskers, Tommy. That's all of us but you. Oh, there is a little gray showing up there. But what a great, great time these guys have had out here on the Huzal. And there have been a few deer killed, and I killed a little one. Tommy, we're going to talk about that a little later in the program, too. Your son Henry's outdoing me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a discussion with him, asking him if he'll teach me how it's done.
Yeah, he'll give you a lesson.
Oh, he'd probably tell me all about it. But Spencer.
Yes, sir.
The history of the Huzal Hilton.
Well, this is part of a century farm, the Pennell Farm, across the river. And then this part here, I guess, was 168 acre homestead back in the 1800s. And my grandfather, James Lloyd Pennell, and his brother, William Floyd Pennell, ended up with owning the farm. And then it was split up, and they took each half, and then it ended up in my mother's family, and Paul and my mom and dad ended up with this acreage that's across the creek, and that's what we call the Huzal Hilton. It's about, I think we've got about 16 acres altogether that we use to camp and hunt on.
But this has gone on for decades, right?
Yes. We started coming in here with four-wheelers in 1985, because the road was so bad, we couldn't get in any other way. Didn't have any electricity. We still don't have electricity, but we bring Coleman lanterns and propane tanks and haul our water in, and we camp over here, and it was just a wonderful time, and we just kind of added to it through the years. And this little cabin is called Fisher's Cabin. And Mr. Fisher was a man that retired out of St. Louis, and he was evidently a friend of my grandparents. And they let him build this cabin over here, and he lived over here. He had a cable across the Huzal, and he had a little flat-bottom wooden John boat he called his skiff, and he would pull himself across the other side, and he'd walk whatever it is, a mile up to their house, and they'd take him to town to buy his supplies, and then he'd come back out here and lived off the land, squirrels and fished and that kind of thing.
Well, Rodney, that doesn't sound like a bad lifestyle to me.
Sounding more attractive all the time, that's for sure.
And Tommy's always saying he's born in the wrong generation. I think he's one of those guys that made a good mountain man, you know.
Yeah.
I even see him at church with a coonskin cap on once in a while.
Yeah, that's my favorite pastor appreciation gift was, I don't wear cowboy hats, don't fit my head, but a coonskin cap did.
Well, you look pretty good in it with that beard and all, you know.
Appreciate that.
I just keep it. Expecting you show up with buckskins on at some point, you know. But, hey, all of you great outdoorsmen, we're enjoying it feels like it's 80 degrees sitting here on this side porch of the Huzal Hilton, and it's been a warm deer season. And, Rodney, what's that done to your deer season?
Well, it started off warm, and it has continued warm. We had one cold front that came in, and that was kind of a fun hunt. Back on October 29th, I was in the stand after work, and I saw a really nice little, well, it was an 8-point buck, and it was a mature deer. Hadn't seen it before on the cameras, and so I thought, I would sure like to be out here tomorrow and see if he repeats that pattern. He was chasing a doe, and so I schemed up plan to go out into the blind, and I realized that blind was close enough to the house to have a 1 gigabyte upload and download signal. And so went into that blind and was dressed in my suit, had meetings all day long, and in between my 10:30 meeting with our accounting firm and an 11 o'clock meeting with our campus administrators, that doe went through, and then a fork buck was following her. And sure enough, this big mature 8-pointer, he came by, and I was able to get an arrow into him. And then I went on to my 11 o'clock meeting. So I didn't even get to retrieve him until after work. But that was a fun hunt, and been able to be a part of
One of a kind. I have never heard a story quite like that.
That's multitasking at its best.
It was fun. I even changed the back. Everybody thought I was in the office because I changed that backdrop to the office. And it's the first time I have ever been dressed up in starting the track of deer. So, yeah, it was a fun experience. Been a good season so far. And the highlight, though, is being here at the Hoosaw Hilton and hanging out at deer camp, and we're having a great old time.
Oh, yeah, you can hear some fabulous stories at deer camp, and even among a bunch of Baptists, I think some of them get stretched a little bit sometimes.
Surely not.
Well, Tommy Miller's got one of the best stories I've heard thus far this deer season. Your son.
Yeah, you season, man. He got it done.
Tell us that story, how that went down.
Well, you know, you season started off with a little bit of rain in the morning, and didn't think it was going to be a great outing because after 2 hours in the stand in the morning, he got cold and wanted to go back to the house. But it actually ended up turning out to be pretty good because we got to, you know, we got to go down and watch a movie and toss the football around, really make some really good memories, you know. And, yeah, we got to the stand that night and had a couple of does come out at first that really wanted to peg us good. And Henry wasn't interested in a doe. He shot a doe last year, and he wanted something with antlers. And so he was bound and determined to get one like that. And so I told him earlier in the day, I said, now, when does come out, then the little bucks will make a way out. And then normally after that, if they're around, the bigger ones will come. And so he waited, and he, you know, I had him stuffed to keep him busy. And sure enough, here come after them does left, a little 4-pointer. And he was happy to shoot that 4, and it came out within 50 yards, but it came out behind our stand. I was so proud of him because when it came out behind the stand, he got turned around with this little single shot 243 that my father-in-law let us borrow, and I adjusted it to put a collapsible stock on it to fit his length of pull and stuff. And he got on that little 4-pointer, was about ready to pull it down, and I said, wait a minute, there's another one coming out of the brush. And so he stopped, and he said, Dad, I think I can take that 4-pointer. I said, wait, just wait. And I said, but look up the hill. I said, there's a bigger one coming. And he said, I looked over, and he said, oh, that's a bigger one. And so, you know, that 8-pointer come down the hill and started to go back in the woods. And so I give it the old Matt, you know, and it turned, and man, I about threw Henry out of deer stand because he made the shot on this buck and dropped it where it stood. And the kid's got ice in his veins when it comes to killing deer. He don't get excited until afterwards when he wanted to drag it back to the truck. And the whole way home from our farm, he talked my ear off about, Dad, did you see that deer didn't even go an inch? You know? I said, buddy, I said, you put a shot on that thing. So,
oh, boy. Now, that's the greatest stories of all time. And Henry's how old?
He's 8 years old.
8 years old.
Started when he's 6.
Yeah, I got 2 deer under his belt already. Well, you tell Henry, you know guys in the church that didn't get to start deer hunting until they're 30 years old.
Yeah.
And he needs to give some of us lessons because I'm not going to tell you how big my buck was I shot the other day, but it wasn't near that big.
Yeah. Well, he'll gladly give it to you.
I'm sure he would, but we all enjoy hearing those types of stories. And, you know, those stories are important to the tradition of deer hunting because we all are sitting here concerned about the future of hunting, whether it's deer hunting, coon hunting, rabbit hunting, whatever, because some of the experts tell us that it may be gone in 50 years hunting altogether. I certainly hope not. But Rodney, I got to listen to you preach Sunday, and you had a sermon. I thought the whole summer was going to be about deer hunting there for the first couple of minutes. But
you know his audience.
Yeah. Boy, he had us on the edge of our seats, you know. But he had a great message there. But still, you alluded to several things that I'd like to touch on during this podcast. And one of them was the tradition of deer hunting. You talked about your own family and, you know, how it was with hunting. And you never got to experience a deer hunting camp as a family in your younger years, because life was so busy. And I think I detected a little bit of a break in the voice, maybe a tear in the eye, when you started talking about Tommy Miller and his family camp that he had. How do you feel about all that?
One of the great joys is being able to introduce, you know, the next generation to our passion for the outdoors and being in God's creation. And I grew up in California, so a little bit different culture. You know, we had a lot of fun. We were in a car culture and things, but hunting wasn't a big part of it. Although my father did take me deer hunting when I was 16 and 17 years old. That was when it was legal. And, you know, I was this crazy kid that wanted to go hunting, but we didn't have a hunting tradition. Really didn't have that on my wife's side of the family. They hunted, but they weren't part of a tradition. And when I had the great privilege of coming to Missouri a few decades ago, started hearing about deer camps and, you know, working with pastors like Brother Tommy and others, and to hear how these traditions have carried on generation after generation. And then a few years ago, Brother Spencer offered opportunity to come here to the Huzzah Hilton. So this is my fifth year of being a part of this tradition. But that's when I found out that Brother Tommy, his family has had a deer camp for decades and decades, and it's a part of their tradition. So I thought, well, I can just volunteer to fill the pulpit for him, because these days I'm not pastoring anymore. I'm leading a Baptist organization, but it focuses on senior care. And so I'm not in the pulpit every week. And it gave me a chance to be a blessing, hopefully, to him and free him up. And, you know, I'm enjoying this. And we've started a deer camp tradition in our home. We do ours in September, because we want to make sure the weather is always miserable. We're here. This is the first year we've had this kind of weather. But, it is so important to have those traditions. And I am blessed to be able to see that now. And my son took up deer hunting just 4 years ago. And so he's a new deer hunter. But already his daughter is an avid hunter. She harvested her first deer at 6 years old. And wow. And we're seeing some of our other children. I took out one of my grandsons who's 18 on his first deer hunt this year. And so the importance of these traditions. But it is just so neat to hear Tommy talk about this. And then, well, we already heard what's happening with his son. Man, he's going to be teaching us all how to hunt deer.
Oh, exactly. But it's just wonderful to see him get started so early. Now, Tommy, the big question, this was discussed in church just a little bit Sunday. How much did you pay Rodney to take your place?
Well, you know, I mean, luckily, I don't have to worry about that. My finance team takes care of that. So, you know, but no, he volunteers to come, and I appreciate the heck out of it. So it gives me a little more time with my family. So,
well, tell us a little bit about your deer camp over there. How long it's been going on? Who comes and what the results are?
You know, where to start? I mean, there's so many. I think every year we tell the same stories that we've heard 100 times. And, you know, it's just cool to see over the years, the guys that brought their kids, and their kids are now older, bringing, you know, their kids down to camp. And, you know, back in the day, you know, my Uncle Mick was the one that found the place, and his old deer stand I hunt by still. You know, he didn't want to, that was his honey hole at the time. And he didn't really, you hear my dad tell him the story is that he didn't really want to take everybody down there to his honey hole, you know. But he did, and got them in down there, and it's been over 40 years. They've been down there camping on that little spot. And, you know, we don't kill – every now and again you'll kill a nice one down there, you know, but there's so many hills and valleys some things disappear into. But we always have a big campfire. One of the things, you know, we've lost quite a few guys over the years, and you still tell the stories, you know, about the different things that they did, the deer they killed, and where we rolled a four-wheeler over here, you know, or killed a deer down that deep ravine. And but it's just family. You know, I'm blessed now to have some other properties to hunt, but I always go back to the National Forest because that's where it all started for me. And, my dad really got me into bow hunting when I was little. And, you know, him and I'll never trade those times for anything, because we would go down and we'd tent camp and we'd bow hunt. And we'd walk through, we'd walk miles. We never kill any deer, you know, but we would walk all them trails. And my dad is the king of finding these little faint trails that the bucks are on. And, you know, he put me on one of the biggest deer I ever killed down there. He put me in a stand right on the trail. And, you know, I was able to get the job done. Now, we almost had a fight in the woods because after I shot that deer, he come over and helped me track that blood. And he goes, "Son, I don't think you got it." And I said, "Dad, I killed that deer." And sure enough, we went about 50 yards and found blood and bone, and we found him about 2 foot from the thicket. But, yeah, my family's been hunting down there for over 40 years, and that opening weekend is kind of a sacred tradition. You know, just, you know, you can go anywhere and hunt, but it's just family connections that come there, and we always remember those that have passed, and we just always have a good time. And, you know, life down there has changed. You know, back in the day, you hear my dad tell a story about, you know, they had a campfire and these little rickety tables and tarps, you know, tied to trees. And now it's RVs and generators and boom boxes. And, you know, we got deep fryers. And so camp has changed a little over the years, but it's still just as nostalgic to go down there and think about all the hunters of the past that have roamed these woods, you know, in our family and the deer that have been killed there and the stories and fellowship that has happened there. And, you know, it's hard when one of them's not there. You know, my brother wasn't able to make it this year and it just wasn't the same without having everybody there. And so you just cherish the time. That's why it's so, you know, important to me, you know, that Rodney fills in, and cause I get to cherish that time together with all of my, you know, family down there and make more memories. And, you know, one day I'll take my sons down there. But right now they're UC, you know, I didn't get to go till I was like you. I didn't get to go till I, you know, back in the day they didn't have U season. So I didn't get to go till I was 12 or 13. And I don't even know if I'd been able to shoot a deer, you know, if one walked in front of me at that time, you know, cause, I had an old lever action 30-30 my dad gave me, but you know, I don't know if I'd have known what to do if a deer walked in front of me, but you know, I passed my class and everything. And, but we, man, there's so many good stories down there where we camp out and wouldn't trade it for anything. It's a good time.
I know you wouldn't. Just tell by the stories. And these are the greatest stories of the deer hunting saga out there. And it's kind of disheartening. I've hunted public land ever since I started deer hunting, I suppose. And I remember I first started that back in the early 70s. You could drive down through the National Forest, head south, you know, from Interstate 44. And you just see deer camp after deer camp after deer camp. You don't see that quite as much as anymore. I mean, we still got as many numbers of deer hunters, if not more than we've ever had. But those camps seem to kind of broken up. I've had a few camps. I've worked in a lot of youth camps, deer camps, and even some senior camps in my lifetime. But I don't have a real deer camp going in my family. I've got a grandson, Ronnie, that loves to hunt. He was bow hunting with me while I was bear hunting recently, but he wasn't able to make it for the youth season. Didn't even make it for regular deer season. Life's busy. Yeah. But I got to ask you, Tommy, you know, you've got a long family history here and you've got boys coming up. Do you consciously take things that your father taught you and you're now teaching those boys?
Oh, most definitely. You know, and I, you know, archery especially, you know, that's one of the things that at our church, you know, we started our center shot ministry. And I love that because it teaches young kids early on the importance of archery. And you know, the cool thing about center shot is we relay that back to the gospel, you know,
exactly.
Using the archery term sin is missing the mark, you know, you know, so I found myself teaching my son, you know, because we live right there on the parsonage. And so we go over and get one of the smaller bows, and I'm teaching him. My dad taught me how to shoot instinctively with a bow, and my dad taught himself. And, you know, he taught me with a cotton ball. You know, he's put 5 yards and shoot that cotton ball until you're hitting it a bunch, and then move it out to 10 and 20 and so forth and so far and so forth. And so I started teaching Henry how to do that with his little bow, and he's a lefty, so everything's backwards, which is hard. But he's getting pretty good at it, man. And one of the things I always had to remember whenever my kids got old, Henry got old enough to hunt, was I had to make it fun. And my dad, you know, my dad was always good at that. And I'll tell you the story of why I loved going to camp. no matter how hard we hunted or whatever we did down there at deer camp, always on the way home, there was a mobile on the run. Well, it wasn't a mobile at that time, I don't think. But,
pump handle.
But pump handle. That's exactly what it was. But we would stop in there, and we'd get us a personal pan pizza and a Coke and a candy bar. And but he made it fun, you know. We didn't, you know, if I don't know if it was his own, he didn't have the patience to sit long enough, but we would sit for a little bit, and then we'd get up and we'd walk. Dad was a big stalker hunter. Uh-huh. And so we just, we'd get up and we'd walk, and we saw all kinds of things that most people never get to see. You know, I could take you to some waterfalls that most people don't know about in the National Forest. And that's because my dad took us walking and we'd squirrel hunt. And, but we'd always on the way home, we pull in and say, "Dad, we getting a pizza?" "Yeah, we'll get a pizza." You know, but to make it fun for these kids, I think some guys get so caught up in getting a big deer for their kids. One of the things that I never killed a lot of deer, but I always had these great stories of my dad and I walking through the woods and seeing things that people didn't see, and he just always made it fun. And so that's a lesson that I've taken off into my teaching my sons is just to make it fun. You know, opening day of a youth season, like I said, it was rainy. Henry got cold after 2 hours, and I thought, well, this hunt's...
Well, tell him that happens again when you get in your 70s.
Yeah, so, you know, but just to make it fun for these kids, you know, I think some guys get so focused on getting their kid a trophy deer that they almost ruin their kids on hunting because it's almost just too much for them, you know, and so just make it fun and just enjoy the... You know, the personal pan pizzas or the little Debbie Christmas tree cakes.
There you go. Excellent points. And I'll throw this question out to everybody. You know, there's three of us sitting here.
Yeah.
Are pretty old, you know, over 200 years, the three of us combined, you know. And we've seen a lot of changes in our lifetime. And we can remember, we were probably, I know your dad, Spencer, taught you patience. Your mom probably did too. Mine did too. And I'm sure Rodney got a dose of that as well. But today, in the world of instant gratification, how does that transpire into your young world, Tommy, of dealing with kids and young folks in your camp?
Well, I think that's the thing is you just, you know, it's called hunting for a reason. If it was, you know, killing, we'd call it killing, but you don't always get, you know, get a chance. And so I think that's the one cool thing about deer camps are, you know, or at least our deer camp, you know, 10:30, you ain't seen nothing. You come back to camp and, you know, we got a few guys, and if they're listening to this podcast, they'll know who they are. They always come back with a story about the big one that got away, you know? And I think the storytelling, the food sharing, you know, we have kind of a set menu for our camp. You know, Friday night we have fried chicken and french fries, or we have wings and french fries, and Saturday we got fried chicken and potatoes, and Sunday night's steak night.
Oh boy!
And so you know,
where's
I think
this place located.
But there you go. But I, you know, I think that's the thing is like that. You know, you don't always kill something, but man, we make some good memories sitting around that campfire, listening to the coyotes down in the bottom. You know, I mean, it's just it's an atmosphere you can't create anywhere else. You know, and you get family and friends around a campfire, and you know, you get real with each other. You know, about things in life, and you know,
absolutely.
I've had many opportunities around that campfire to share the gospel, you know, and that's something that's very important to me because I want them to have the same hope that I have, you know, and so whether I kill a deer or not, you know, I want them to know that I love them, all them guys around, I want them to know that I love them, and I want them to have that same hope that I have in Jesus. And so, you know, I don't know what they would say about me if I'm not there, but I can tell you this, that they're not going to get away from me without hearing the gospel message, you know, and
there
so.
You go. Kind of a captive audience, a deer camp.
Yeah, where are you going to go, right?
Yeah.
I've got a rifle. Where are you going to go?
But what wonderful, wonderful stuff. And all of us here, I think, are kindred hearts. And I know these other two old guys I'm staring at here could tell stories till the end of time, yeah, I think, you know. But Spencer, you've lived right here in this area all of your life, and I kind of poked fun at Spencer in a newspaper article here a while back. I took him on his first kayak trip, I think. We floated down to Huzon, had a great time. And your dad wasn't a fisherman as such, was he?
He did fish, but not the rivers much. He used to do lake fishing and pond fishing around
easy
local
stuff.
Guys with his with his buddies. And then gigging was something that we did. But
well, you're not a true Ozarker if you haven't been gigging.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's great. I haven't been yet this year. I'm waiting for an invite.
Well, yeah, me too. I got a plan, though. Things are coming up. But your dad was a deer hunter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was a big deer hunter back when there weren't hardly any deer. He was good at that, and he helped feed some people back in the day when they needed that to get by. And so that was something. But he loved to go deer hunting. And I remember one year when I was a kid, he got the mumps, and he was probably 35 years old, and that seemed old to me at the time. But he managed not to get them when he was a child, and he laid on that couch just hoping he could get up and go deer hunting. I think he finally did before the season was over with, but he never missed. And he wanted us boys to be involved in it. And Paul and I have kind of caught that from him. And I've got a son and a grandson that I got to take on the youth hunt a couple of years. And it's just a great, great tradition, a lot of fun.
It certainly is. And, well, those youth hunts, I love them. In fact, Ray and myself, somebody from Cabela's decades ago, we actually held the first youth hunt in the state of Missouri prior to there being a youth deer season. We actually had some special legislation passed to allow us to do that, going to Peck Ranch, and brought 9 kids in there. We had 8 kids that killed deer. 9 little boy missed, and he cried the rest of the camp.
Oh, man.
He's kind of like me. What great fun. Hey, we tell deer stories forever. But, folks, we're going to take a short break here to hear from some of today's sponsors. But don't go away. We got, I think, a couple more stories to tell.
Oh, my.
We'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Brown, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. We sure had a good time.
Yeah.
Got here Tommy Miller, Spencer Hudson, and Dr. Rodney Harrison. So glad to have you all you guys on. We've had a good time. I think we could skip deer hunting for the afternoon and just sit here and tell stories, because I know you guys could all write a book and you haven't scratched the surface yet. But hey, to hit a little bit the more serious side of deer hunting, I need to carry a recorder with me everywhere I go, because I hear some really interesting stories sitting around campfires, particularly in deer camp. But hear lots of discussions too, and there's lots of things centered around deer hunting that we could discuss. And of course, in 20 minutes or so, you can't get to all of them. But lots of people in the world would like to take our hunting rights away from us. Lots of people would like to stop deer hunting. I made a mistake last year posting on Facebook, I think it was, I had killed a doe about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just dropped her right in the track. She had an 8-point buck with her, but the property I was hunting on, the guy had 4 sons, and I didn't want to kill the bucks. I want to leave them for the boys. But little buck run off up in the woods. A few minutes, he's right back with that doe, and she obviously was in heat. He was hooking her with her horns, trying to get her to stand back up and all this. Well, at dark, that buck is there still, bedded down with her. Well, it's time to quit and time to go retrieve my deer. And I walked up within good 15 yards of this buck, and he stood up and he lowered his head and he stared at me, and I thought, this dude's going to run me down. You know? So I'm picking up rocks to run this buck off. And I posted it on that on Facebook, had over 1 million views of this and about 15,000 responses from anti-hunters who ready to have me hung. You know, you're a terrible person. You killed that buck's wife. And I didn't know they had wives, but on and on and on. Had one lady from the UK and said, you're just a horrible human being killing animals like that. Why don't you come over here and kill some of these Russians for me?
Oh, my.
But on and on and on. But that's the kind of thing that we deal with. And that seems so foreign to all of us sitting here, because when I was raised as poor as I was, we hunted and fished, literally put protein on the table, you know. And I can remember that first squirrel or two I shot. I didn't run over it, but, you know, I killed it. And I was so proud, and I come home and I put some meat on the table, and I felt like I was a man at that point. I was probably 10 years old. I was a little man, but I felt like I had contributed something. But not everybody feels like that. But what we find ourselves doing these days as hunters is defending hunting through the economic impact, because we know everybody understands dollars. But if we look at just Missouri alone, there are about 450,000 deer hunters in the state. This information comes from Aaron Hildreth. He's the survey biologist for the Missouri Department of Conservation. But it's a $1.6 billion industry just in the state of Missouri. I had no idea it was that huge. Supports about 12,000 to 14,000 jobs. That's just deer hunting. What would that do, Spencer, to Steelville, Missouri, if we eliminated deer hunting? I can't imagine how many deer run through, is it Mary's Valley, right here close to us? Great, up-to-date facility, take a lot of deer in there.
Right.
supports several families. Lots of people work there.
Yeah.
So if you took that away from all the rural communities here in the state of Missouri, it would hurt a lot of people. But if we expand it beyond that, you know, if we look at it nationwide, golly, hunting altogether is that's a huge number, $108 billion industry.
Wow.
Pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, supports, that is a bigger, is a GNP, gross national product. That's larger than the gross national products of 14 countries in the world, just deer hunting. Mm-hmm. And we talk about armies, you know, if we took the deer hunters from the four most popular deer hunting states, we'd have the largest military in the world. So hunting is still huge in the United States, and I hope and pray that it's going to stay that way for a while, for a long while, forever, I hope, until Jesus comes back, you know. Yeah. But 540,000 jobs, man. Tommy, I know you like guns. How much money you think is spent by...
Quite a bit.
I wasn't asking you personally.
Oh, on me? I thought you were talking about everybody.
Everybody. I am talking about everybody. I won't get you in trouble, you know. It's one of those things I always tell everybody, you know, when I pass away, I hope my wife don't sell all my outdoor goods for what I told her I paid for. Oh, low joke. But economy. How much does each one of us spend a year on outdoor equipment? It's a big number. We don't want ladies to know that, you know. Although ladies got to where they're spending a lot of money as well. But in your all's experience, what about the ladies in the family? Any of you guys' wives hunt?
No. You know, it's interesting. My wife doesn't hunt, but she is a mentor for first-time hunters. She volunteers with our senior deer hunts. And, you know, she is so supportive of it. She supports our grandchildren, our granddaughters, and their interest in hunting. She supports our daughters and their interest in hunting. And so, you know, she grew up in a hunting culture. Her parents would go hunting. In fact, venison was a staple in their diet, from what I understand, kind of year-round staple in the diet back in those days. And so she is a real strong advocate for the sport, and I'm so blessed to, you know, have a wife that is supportive of that. But, you know, I think we are seeing more women coming into hunting. In fact, this year we're starting to have some field-to-fork events just for the gals so that they can be introduced to hunting, and we're seeing far more interest in women in the outdoors, and I think that's an encouraging sign.
It really is. An excellent point you made, and I'm glad you made it because you support my next point. Guess who has the most influence over children, whether or not they will become hunters? Is it mom or is it dad?
I take it that you're going to say it's mom.
You got to give it away.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely. It's the moms. And I think it's swerved that way in the last few decades when we have so many single parent families, and it's usually mom that takes care of the kids. It's the moms, particularly these days, that are deciding whether that kid is going to hunt or not. And that's another reason we've seen the growth in women's outdoor programs across the United States. Man, if any lady out there is wanting to get into hunting, wow, just start looking. Hey, get a hold of the Missouri Department of Conservation. Get a hold of the Department of Natural Resources. Get a hold of the National Deer Association. Get a hold of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Turkey Federation, Ducks Unlimited, on and on and on. They all have programs. NRA has a big program for women. So there's ample opportunity out there. And women, I taught a shooting class one time for, I guess it's NWTF, in the women's program. Boy, after that, I said I'd never do that again. They were tough. They didn't like it in the first place because a guy was teaching, you know, and a lot of women in their history have not got into hunting because who's going to teach them? It's usually husband, boyfriend, uncle, grandpa, or somebody. And I don't know if guys enjoyed making it tough for ladies to get into the hunting and shooting sports or what, but it's that good old male macho ego problem, you know. But ladies, let me tell you, I went through officer's school back in the early 70s, and one fort I was at, my platoon leader was a lady, a very beautiful young lady, by the way, blonde head, blue eyed. And boy, the money started passing hands. Who was going to get the first date with this gal, you know? But she could outshoot all of us. Was an excellent. I mean, I wouldn't have been afraid to go into combat with that lady at all. But some tall, dark, good looking boy from Georgia won $4,000 out of the deal because he got first date with her. But what a deal. The ladies can shoot. Now, I have a wife who used to be an NRA pistol instructor. And Tommy had eaten a little bit of crow, you know, at church here a year or so ago. We were talking about, we have a diaper shoot occasionally when one of the young ladies is having a baby in church, and the guys come and they have to bring a case of diapers to be able to shoot. Well, my Diane raised her hand. Tommy said, "Diane, you need something." "Yeah, can't the girl shoot too?" He's kind of stuttering, you know, and the rest of a lot of laughter. And I'm sitting there shaking my head. Spencer says, "Bill's shaking his head. No." I said, "Don't let her shoot. Well, why not?" I said, "You'll find out. She'll beat us all."
That's right.
What happened, Tommy?
She got a job. I think she took first in that diaper shoot.
She did. Yeah. And that one, she beat us all. But it's great to see, but I don't argue with my wife much, you know. It's just one of those things that I love it. She doesn't hunt that much anymore, but as you said, Rodney, she's very supportive and never complained. And I was just gone for a week to South Dakota, leaving for a week in the next two or three weeks. And she's always very supportive, but she's also very supportive of her grandchildren and leading them into the hunting and shooting sports. But, you know, it's tough to argue with a grandma that was a NRA pistol instructor. When she talks, they listen. Yeah. All right, another thing I want to cover right quick. We in our Baptist group here, is it called Merrimack Valley?
Merrimack Baptist Association is what this is.
Yeah. Okay, Merrimack Baptist Association. We have an annual wild game dinner that attracts, man, gobs of people. How many people show up at that thing, Spencer?
Men and boys wild game dinner. We'll run about 300 people.
Wow, that's a bunch. And what's the purpose of that?
Well, the purpose is to bring men and boys together about something that they enjoy doing, the sport of hunting and fishing and that kind of thing. But the real purpose is to have an opportunity to share the gospel with them. And so we'll have a speaker that, you know, is someone that can talk their language and tell some good stories and so show some good pictures. But they always come around to tell them what's really important, and that's having a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so that's the deal. And it's an opportunity for a Christian men to invite their friends to something like that, that probably maybe wouldn't come to their church or would maybe be more reluctant. So, and the guys get to brag on their recipes and that kind of thing. This year, we're going to do something different with a crock pot. What's it called, Tommy?
Crock pot cook-off.
Crock pot cook-off. And it doesn't have to be wild game necessarily.
Ah.
But they have to bring a crock pot and they have to be proud of it, and it's going to be judged.
Oh,
and that's kind of a neat deal.
Do you have to tell the truth about what's in the pot?
Well, probably not. And the other thing that was introduced last year that was a hit that they're going to do this year is the, what was
hoot
it?
Hoot owl call.
Oh, the owl
hoot owl. Hoot owl call.
Yeah, that was great. I was just shocked how many people participated.
Oh, man, they loved it. Yeah. So it's really a great time, and that's the last Friday night in January. I think it's the 27th. I don't have my calendar with me, but the last Friday night. And it's just a great time for men and boys to get together. We just got through talking about having ladies in the sports, but
yep.
This started out as a tradition back when some of us guys that are in our 70s had little boys, and we would do a gigging trip, and we'd do an overnight camp out, and it was a men and boys fish fry. And that's how that started a long time ago, back in the 80s, early 90s, and it's kind of evolved into this wild game dinner thing now.
Well, boy, it's a tremendous time. I know I wouldn't miss it for anything. And it's just, it amazes me that, you know, some of the speakers that you bring in are pretty top-notch people. And we've had Ralph Duren in several times, I think, 2-3 times.
That's amazing.
Just incredible. I've known Ralph. I've been a lot of hunting camps with Ralph. It's an interesting story behind him. He had a one kind of job with a conservation department for about 30-plus years. But his job title was wildlife imitator. I've never heard another job title like that, but this guy literally could do about 130 wild animal sounds with his voice, you know, everything from frogs to crickets and birds and
entertain you the whole time.
Oh, great. Love to hear him gobble. I mean, I think he can go through 30 gobbles without taking a breath. But Ralph, he was a Baptist by trade, I'll say, and he used to travel with a singing quartet, had quite the voice. But old Rap Snore were the best of them as well. Well, you used to be at turkey hunting camps with them Ray Eyes Media camps up North Missouri. Had about 3,500 acres to hunt on, just like a paradise. Had an old schoolhouse, kind of reminds me of this place, Spencer, the Hilton here. But it was, I don't think he had insulation in the walls back in those days, because you could be at the opposite end of the building and Ralph would keep you awake with his snoring.
Yeah.
Well, it got so bad that we kind of took up a collection. We built him a snoring closet. You know, those old steep stairwells, you know, we boxed it. It wasn't very big, but his cot and Ralph would fit in there and we'd close him up in there and we couldn't hear him snoring. You know, and I think he basically got a CPAP and whatever, but, what a tremendous, tremendous time. But Tommy, a topic that often comes up, we've discussed it in our circles, we hear it, and if you're on social media, you see it all the time, guys talking about the outdoors being their church. And I have no doubt, because I've done it many times myself, sat out on that deer stand or in duck blind or whatever. Yeah, you feel very close to God and to the creation and that sort of thing, but we say, but. What do you say, Tommy?
Well, you know, I mean, that you get to where you start worshiping creation over the creator, you know, and listen, I'm one of those guys that loves to be out there and to see, you know, I always talk about watching the forest wake up, you know, and, you know, this morning I was praying and I thank the Lord for the rain we got last night and the sunshine and just the picture that gives us of, you know, the storms of life that sunshine provides us hope that there's something after the storm. And you know, I think what we end up doing is that becomes, you know, we say we're closer to God, but our relationship with him, wanes, you know, and again, that creation becomes our God. And you know, that's a dangerous slope. And you know, we just have to be careful in that and understand, you know, that we were created to be together, you know, and you know, I understand, like, a lot of our guys, I know that when this time of year rolls around that they may be gone. But the important thing to me is that the rest of the time of the year, they're there in church, worshiping together with the body of believers, you know, and Hebrews reminds us of that, to not forsake the assembling together, because even though being out here and amongst the creation, you know, there's a peace about it. But when you get amongst a body of believers and you are worshiping together, that is a picture of what heaven is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And you know, guys always ask, it's funny you brought this up. Guys always ask, you know, what, I wonder if there's going to be deer hunting in heaven. I wonder, you know, you know, you hear guys at funerals say, well, I hope he spotted me out a good spot. And I think, you know, guys, I think we're selling God short here, because when we get to heaven, we're going to be satisfied. And I think all deer hunters understand never being satisfied, right? Because at the end of the year, if you kill a big buck, you're satisfied until September 15th, whenever it's time to go back into the woods. And you're looking for that bigger deer, you know? And I think, guys, like, you're thinking too human. You're not thinking on a God scale and thinking about how he is going to be the center of our worship. And we are going to be truly satisfied when we are in heaven with him. And I just, you know, that's my biggest point to them, is we don't know what it means to be truly satisfied. And when our life ends and we hear those words, well done, my good and faithful servant, and we are welcomed into eternity with the Father in heaven, man, then we'll know. But yeah, that's a dangerous slope that we can get in the habit of. And, you know, I love to hunt and fish and do all that stuff, but it, you know, whenever that becomes more important than God, that becomes our idol. And we have to be careful about worshiping that idol. And I've seen a lot of families, a lot of marriages fall apart because a husband is chasing after that satisfaction. And that's a dangerous slope. You know, it can be, you know, like with everything, in moderation, you know. I talked about making it fun for my son, you know. Like, if it was up to me, we would have hunted 6 hours straight, you know, but he would have hated that. And instead, you know, we, after 2 hours, we went back down to the house. We tossed the football. We watched Sandlot. You know, we did all this stuff, and we made these memories. And then God blessed us with a beautiful deer at the end of the night. And had he not blessed us with that, it would have been a great time in the stand with my son. And I would have done just like my dad. We'd have found us a personal pan pizza to get around, you know. I mean, make it fun for them. And so, yeah, it's again, you know, I think when we get in the danger of watching, like, you know, some of these outdoor programs and stuff, they're always selling you this next thing, and you feel like you got to have this and you got to have that. And, you know, I would go back to thinking, and the Lord reminded me of this, you know, I've got hundreds of dollars worth of stuff that helps me climb trees, and I'm a mobile saddle hunter. And I got down on my tree stand or my saddle because I was freezing Sunday morning. And, I started walking because, you know, the day before was 78 degrees. And I started walking to warm up. And I was telling Rodney earlier, I sat down on a log, and not 20 minutes later, here comes some deer down the hillside. And I thought, what am I doing? you know? And so, yeah, it's a dangerous slope, man. We always feel like we got to keep up with the Joneses. We feel like we got to get a bigger deer than the next guy. And we're missing out on the fellowship that comes from just being in camp together. But then also, you know, if we dedicate ourselves to that, we find ourselves really lonely. Because when January 15th rolls around in Missouri, you know, suddenly those guys that their identity was a hunter is now no more. And so, you know, if you're a believer, you know, I look forward to being back with my congregation, and I like having some time alone, but I look forward to being there. And that's one thing at Deer Creek. You know, I think that, and this is a culture before I even got there, you know, that when you walk through the doors, you know, you get, if you don't get three or four handshakes and a welcome
before you get in the door.
Yeah. Normally those guys stand out there and they're telling deer stories, you know, but you know, there's just something more, you know, a lot of that, the woods, I feel closer to God is a front, you know, men won't admit that they're too afraid to say, you know what? I don't quite understand what it means to have a relationship with Jesus. And the Lord laid in my heart a long time ago to go right after those guys, you know, and just tell them about this personal relationship that has blessed me and taken me on a ride that I can only give credit to God for where he's taken me. Because if it was my choice and my decision, I would have been somewhere else. But I look back on my life and the short life that I've lived, and I see just how God has had his hand on my life. And I owe a lot of that to my youth pastor who poured into me. And you know, he told me, this fits with our podcast, but he told me a slogan that kept me out of a lot of trouble. He said, Tommy, you can't soar like an eagle if you're running around with a bunch of turkeys. And that kept me out of a lot of, you know, because this kid's brain, you know, I was a hunter, so I knew what an eagle flew like, and I definitely knew what a turkey flew like, you know. So that kept me out of a lot of trouble. And so I just hope those guys have that same, you know, hope and that feeling of togetherness at our church. You know, that's what we shoot for. We do a lot of things with our men's ministry and getting guys together, meeting them where they're at, whether it's skeet shooting or shooting our archery programs, dinners and things like that. We meet those guys where they're at, but ultimately our goal is to help them have a relationship with Jesus. You know, that is the bottom line.
Absolutely. Well stated. But carry that just a little bit further. And from my own personal example, I've been a Christian since I was 11 years old, been an outdoorsman long before that even. And it, you know, in a child's mind, it's hard to figure a lot of these things out. But we look for examples. We follow other people for sure. But I had a time in my life was pretty lonely, and I spent a couple of years, literally out in the woods pretty much by myself. And I worshiped God while I was there, and I felt his touch on my life. But then this yearning started again. I felt the need to be with other Christian people, particularly Christian men, and that assembling together.
That's right.
And reason I'm at Deer Creek is because a fellow reached out three times. Ernie.
Treff, yeah.
Oh, man.
Treff was quite a character, outdoorsman. I first met him in a restaurant. I'd been bird hunting, had on some bird hunting attire. So did he. You were sitting across the restaurant, you know. We kept eyeballing each other, you know. I just want to know where he was hunting. I'm sure he won't know where I was hunting. But he came over and introduced himself, sat down, and we talked a little bit of bird hunting. But we wasn't 5 minutes in that conversation. You go to church anywhere? I mean, it just, I wasn't expecting that, I guess, right. You know, kind of hit me upside the head a little bit. And I just, I don't know, there's something come up in me. I almost want to tell me it wasn't anybody's business, you know. But I said, yeah, I've got a church. I've gone to church all my life. Well, that's all said about that. And then sometime later, run into him in the barbershop. That was 3 or 4 years later. Talked a few minutes again. You go to church anywhere? Yeah, I got a church. 2 or 3 years later, running to him again. You going to church anywhere? I need a church. And lo and behold, there we can. But that's how it works. But people meeting together in God's house, there's nothing that replaces that. I know that's true in my own life. And I teach Spencer. He's a great, great Sunday school teacher. And I love sitting in Sunday school and listening to him talk. But he lets all the rest of us talk and discuss a little bit, too. And I've never told him this, but I had a Sunday school teacher as a child that reminded me so much, but it was a lady. We called her Old Mother Hubbard. Oh, trying to come up with a name for Spencer, you know. But it is a great place. It's a rural church, Deer Creek Church on the F Highway out of Cuba, Missouri. If you don't have a church, we'd love to have you.
That's right.
And you know what, Spencer? We've got a gigging trip coming up. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Every year, the week. Before the week of our men and boys wild game dinner, we go on a gigging trip on the Merrimack River. And it's a good, good time. We have lots of guys show up, so we're allowed to kill lots of fish. And boy, we got some good giggers in that group. We have to
say, if we don't eat them all.
Yeah, that's my
fault. We have to sample them. Be sure they're
that's my fault. First couple years of that, we didn't eat any. I said, man, this is nuts, killing all these fish, and we're not even trying them out. So we got a little bit of trouble maybe the year before last for eating too many of them, but. Hey, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
But what a great time, guys. It's been great to have you on the podcast. A lot of great information. And folks, I hope you realize that all of us sitting here, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your outdoor dreams as well. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.